The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Dave Garrity is back. He's principal at GVA Research. He wrote in a note today that the markets are faced with the vanishing punch bowl phenomenon, but they will weather this and move on. And he's also got some very interesting things to say about the big tech companies, as always. Dave, welcome.
Thank you very much, Kathleen. Good morning.
So that's the big question. What's going to happen to the stock market rally, and for that matter, the bond market rally, which is already reversed after Ben Bernanke makes it very clear that the Fed is contemplating tapering off on its bond purchases program at some point when the economy is strong enough. But as many people expected, all you got to do is talk about it and the markets start reacting. What's going to happen?
Well, I mean, certainly everything that Bernanke said yesterday was highly conditional, which was saying simply, you know, if the economy tracks in line with their expectations, and if we look at today's economic data, which clearly is mixed, if we look at leading indicators, and if we also look at unemployment claims, you know, we can't necessarily say that it's a foregone conclusion that the Fed is going to be able to get out of the market. But clearly they've indicated a strong inclination that if things do follow through, yes, the liquidity is going to go away. Fundamentals, though, the fundamentals are arguably in a situation here in the U.S. if the Fed's expectations are met, those fundamentals economically would arguably justify higher stock prices unless we get some dramatic change as far as the shape of the yield curve is concerned. And I don't think that that's going to happen. So the other thing to bear in mind is, apart from the conditional statements of Bernanke, you know, we are certainly still operating in a global economy where central banks worldwide are still very, very much in an easing process, certainly with Japan having really stepped up aggressively in the end of 2012, and most likely will continue to do through 2013.
Yeah, you in fact say, David, perhaps Bernanke will let Abe perform the heavy lifting from here and maybe even invite him as a guest keynote at Jackson Hole.
That's always possible. I can't necessarily guess who's going to be on the guest list at Jackson Hole. But
well, I can tell you, Ben Bernanke's not going. He made that very clear yesterday.
But I mean, the wider point, I suppose, is that you're saying that the Bank of Japan is continuing to ease, so not all central banks are pulling back on the throttle. So, you know, maybe that will take over the place of the Federal Reserve.
Well, what it argues is that, you know, one, we don't know how quickly the Federal Reserve itself is going to be able to execute, depending upon U.S. economic performance. And we can say that there are certainly other significant central banks who are still in process of easing, and that, yes, on balance, we may actually end up having the same level of central bank liquidity in the markets. Perhaps for the next 12 months, if not longer.
Well, David, you've watched and participated in and managed money and advised clients for many years. Seems to me that one of the real challenges right now is not just assessing out what the economy and the Fed are going to do, it's also trying to assess out market perception. Because you could be a brave soul and say, you know, the economy is going to do fine without, even if the Fed does start tapering off in the next few months, and there's plenty of, and in fact, then people might get more optimistic on stocks because the Fed is pulling back. At some point, they would say that perhaps. So you could go ahead and buy stocks now. But you could be totally wrong in terms of what the market does, because if this perception is so ingrained that once the Fed stops buying bonds and there's less addition of liquidity every month, stocks almost have to fall by definition, that's not going to be a winning position, at least not for a while.
It might not be. And then certainly, you know, we're in a situation here where we had a protracted run in terms of rise in the stock market, during the first half of 2013. And clearly, you know, we're not yet corrected by even more than 5% off of the high that we had in the S&P 500 back on May 22nd. But in a longer-term perspective, we still operate in a world where the available returns for investors looking across asset classes are relatively low, even though, you know, a two-year, arguably at, 2.42% or so, isn't necessarily anything to get all that excited about, especially when you're looking at inflation that may be somewhere between 1.5 and 2, so your real return is quite nominal, or minimal, actually. So it comes back to still having equities as an asset class where companies are growing, they have ample cash, they have the opportunity to reward shareholders through higher dividends, they also have the ability to buy back stock if need be. And so from that standpoint, on a relative basis, equities still appear to be an attractive asset class and one which probably should be bought in the context of this pullback.
What about the prospects for corporate investment? David, you deal a lot with the tech sector. I mean, if rates are going higher, will we see less CapEx?
I don't think so. I think we're still in a situation here. If we look at the balance sheets across, say, the S&P 500, or we're looking more broadly across the U.S. economy, we're in a situation here where corporations have ample resources to go out and make investments of a long-term nature. And we're also still in a situation here where, you know, long-term interest rates for corporate credits remain very, very low, such that, you know, it is still an attractive environment for people to go out and make investments in areas such as enterprise technology. And then one thing that we've mentioned in the note earlier was we've seen the rise of big data. And from that standpoint, big data being something where we're operating certainly in a far more information-intensive economy. And to that extent, actors, whether they're corporations or individuals, need to find a better way.
Dave, a big tech industry watcher, you know, slowing sales, they declined this quarter, hasn't really scared off investors, and it is a big earnings week for the bigger technology companies, David. How do you see the week finishing out for them?
I mean, for the technology companies, you know, certainly currently environments, geographies such as Europe remain challenged. You know, purchasing here in the U.S., somewhat cautious. Again, as we were talking earlier, it's really more a matter of trying to focus on what are, you know, underlying themes and areas of strength. And we think that overall technology as a sector certainly benefits significantly from what we've been calling and other people have been calling big data, which if you want to talk about what are the components in big data, we're looking at things like cloud-based storage of data, data mining technologies, also business intelligence and analytics. And we can look at all these areas, and we've certainly seen a tremendous rise, both in terms of startup companies that have been organizing around this area, company Dropbox come to mind, that's privately held. But for investors looking at publicly traded names that are well-established and that offer dividends, companies such as EMC, IBM, Intel, and Microsoft are at least four names that come to mind that we think are relatively attractive and obviously merit consideration in the current environment.
Yeah, it's funny, Kathleen, last week you weren't here, but Scott Rothbard and Bob Rice both agreed on the program about this very same topic and mentioned IBM being a particular front runner.
That's really something to me because these are names, and you know, who also has been very positive, Bonnie, as you know, on our show about Intel, is Jack Rivkin, Neuberger Berman, also on the board at Idea Lab, so highly involved with a lot of little small techie startup companies around the world, but looking at another big name. That's what's fascinating to me, Dave, is you've got Microsoft, which is now, it's a value company. It's not a big growth stock. You're talking IBM, Intel, big established companies as ones that will continue to benefit.
No, certainly. And I think in the case of looking at someone like Microsoft, obviously the public perception on Microsoft has been and to some extent still remains very much tied to the PC operating system software that it has. But the thing that people have to view with Microsoft is now you do have an activist investor, a Value Act Capital, Jeff Ubben, who's gotten involved with the company. You certainly have a situation here where, from a management standpoint, the current CEO, Steve Ballmer, arguably is coming up to a point where there'll have to be succession. And you have a number of different elements here which are arguing that should Microsoft as a company continue to be the entity that it is now, or should there be some consideration given to possibly, you know, splitting up the company into constituent parts? And if you do start taking the company apart, in this regard, you start to find that within its enterprise software as a service operations, you have a sizable company with better than $2 billion in revenues, growing very rapidly, which arguably, if it could be, you know, set out on a carve-out basis, could certainly be highlighted in terms of a significant value within Microsoft. So the situation for Microsoft, a company which has clearly gone nowhere over the last 10 years as far as the stock price is concerned, there are elements that are coming into place both from technology trends, but also from activist investing trends. which argue that, you know, here's a stock which in this environment probably has good solid support.
What about Oracle coming out after the close today, David?
Yeah, no, no. Certainly Oracle is going to be very, very important in terms of looking forward to this whole second quarter earnings season for technology companies. What has been disappointing for Oracle, one had been, I think, back in the most recent quarter, the February quarter, we'd seen slowing license sales. I think they were actually down for the first time in some time. But the other issue for Oracle that they've had to contend with has been the residual effects from their acquisition of Sun Microsystems, where clearly, you know, they're not a hardware company. However much they might have wanted to get access of Java software, which was the main reason for the purchase. But on their own, there's some elements we think that slow Oracle and don't necessarily make it as attractive a company to invest in right now as the other names we mentioned.
Want to say anything about Apple?
Certainly. Yes, Apple, which even in, you know, granted everything in the market right now is being sold off today, but Apple seems to be holding up a little bit better than others. With regard to Apple, we're seeing a decline here at 1.4%. So, obviously it's a falling knife in the market today, but Apple itself, you know, still represents fairly substantial value. And we think that what was being said earlier about the trade-in program for Best Buy of the iPhone would argue favorably for demand for Apple products to the extent that consumers stay with Apple as an ecosystem. We think that Apple's set up to have a good half, second half, in terms of 2013.
And let me just jump in with a couple of disclosures here for Dave Garrity in terms of the stocks he owns. And personally, family and firm, all of them, Apple is one of those stocks, right, Dave? You also own in one of those categories Intel, Microsoft, and what else?
Document Security Systems and Infineon.
Okay.
That's among the stocks just want to that get we that may be talking table, about today. I'm sure there are more in there. But David, just wondering as well, Samsung now, you know, making inroads into Apple's market share in certain cases and even opening sort of retail stores. What's the future for Samsung, particularly with the yen environment?
Right. Well, I mean, certainly for Samsung, you do have a situation here where they don't necessarily have control their destiny in that they don't control their own software for their smartphones. They're very much dependent upon Google's development of the Android operating system, which certainly to this point has served them well, but they don't necessarily have as tightly integrated a user experience on smartphones as, say, Apple does. And as we saw with the recent Apple Developer Conference, we're certainly going to have Apple coming out in the second half of the year with a major upgrade of their own operating software. And we don't think that Samsung is going to be able to necessarily match that because there have been some rumors that they would be trying to do something in terms of their own software on an internal basis. And we think that overall, the more important dynamics in the smartphone market going forward isn't necessarily going to be the look and feel of hardware. Everybody has very nice hardware. Everyone has a very nice look and feel. But it really is going to be the software, which proves to be the gating factor for the user experience. And I think in that respect, you know, Samsung, while they have been very successful piggybacking off Google's software, I think for Samsung to successfully displace Apple over the long run, they are going to have their own integrated proprietary software development capability.
I'd like to bring this full circle quickly to a question you raised with Vani at the outset, or Vani raised with you, which is rising rates. Will companies still invest in CapEx, et cetera? Because the thought that came to my mind, and I want to drill down with you, when the economy's better, rates rise because there's more demand for capital, and it's not a bad thing necessarily. Is it possible we get to a situation like that where we could be sort of late 90s, economy's doing better, companies are investing, we're more productive, inflation stays low, and you have sort of a Goldilocks episode?
My hope, well, yeah, certainly the intention and the hope is that if we do get to a 3 to a 3.5% GDP growth for the U.S. economy in 2014, that, you know, Goldilocks could be something that we see quite well. You know, even recently where we had seen, what, on high-yield bonds, you know, yields of 5%, obviously these could back up a couple hundred basis points, but even at a 7% borrowing cost, I think that you would still find, you know, corporate activity remaining significant. You know, a level where I think that you might on the margin start to see things slow down you know, might be probably somewhere for like 9% or so on corporate below investment grade credits. But I don't think at these levels we're necessarily going to see anything slow down as far as investment spending is concerned, in large part because of the strength in corporate balance sheets we discussed earlier.
David Garrity, thank you so much. And you are with GVA Research.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.